Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning in to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill. And happy President's Day to those of you out there in the United States who might be tuning in on this particular day or celebrating. Today, before we get started, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsors, the people who make today's show possible, Markham Search, LLC. Markham Search offers premier professional recruiting services throughout the United States, including temporary payrolling services, executive search, and contingency search. So please do keep them in mind for all of your payrolling needs. Today on the show, we have with us John J. Murphy. In 1988, John Murphy founded Venture Management Consultants, Inc., a network of world-class consultants, educators, practitioners, and mentors. The company specializes in helping people and organizations worldwide to achieve and sustain peak performance through effective deployment, development, and implementation of best practices techniques. Their services include leadership education, mentoring, change design, management, team training, and development, as well as inspirational presentations and workshops. John has delivered services to dozens of leading organizations. Some of these have included Fortune 500 companies, as well as the United States government. They focus from a client-oriented standpoint, and they've noticed that all too often organizations and companies implementing operational excellence do so without addressing the human and cultural implications of such change. And since that time, John has actually written 20 different books, many of them focusing on miracles. And John, correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the books was specifically HR-oriented, correct?
Well, yeah, they all have an HR flavor or emphasis, because it's really about people and getting people aligned and pulling together and synergizing and creating that extraordinary power when people actually do that. And in so many cultures, people are working, they're doing the best they can, but the system that they're working in is dysfunctional. So there's a lot of energy being lost. So what I do is I help channel that energy into much more productive and powerful results by simply getting people focused and aligned on top priorities.
That's brilliant. So John, thanks so much for joining us first and foremost on the show. I know it's a pleasure to have you here, and we were lucky enough to get to interview you on Awake TV Network for a TV interview back in December, I believe it was, right?
Yes, that was great. Thank you.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about this. How did miracles become something that were important and become part of what it is you go out and create in corporations now?
Great question, because a lot of people don't put miracles and management in the same sentence. But for years, I was always in the inspiration business, and inspiration comes from the word in spirit. And in spirit essentially means in flow and fearless and highly productive. So athletes call that the zone. You know, you get into this space, this energetic frequency of flow. It's miraculous. Amazing things happen when you get into that zone, into that frequency. So I help organizations and people and leadership teams get into a higher frequency. All of this now is measurable scientifically, which is quite fascinating. And before the show, Jennifer, you know, we were chatting just a little bit about one of your recent guests, Deepak Chopra. So as I was developing my own knowledge base over the last 30 plus years, I read and followed all kinds of inspiring people and great thinkers, great leaders. And Deepak was one of them. And you know, so I remember hearing Deepak reference A Course in Miracles. And then I heard, you know, Marianne Williamson addressing A Course in Miracles. Dr. David Hawkins, a great mentor of mine, the late David Hawkins, mentioning A Course in Miracles. Eckhart Tolle, Wayne Dyer. So many people mentioning this A Course in Miracles, ACIM. And I didn't know what it was at the time. I was like, what is this A Course in Miracles that everybody's talking about? So I investigated it and enrolled, took the course. I'm actually taking it now for like the fifth time. It's just a refresher. It's a one-year course about learning how to really get out of your own way and get into a love-based frequency versus a fear-based frequency, which translates into ego. So transcending that ego box, that ego thought system, and seeing in the world and yourself in the world in a very different way. And so after completing the Course in Miracles and writing several inspirational books touching on it, I finally decided to write a book that actually incorporated it into a leader's change. So I took a book I wrote 26 years ago called Agent of Change, Leading a Cultural Revolution, where this character, Jack McDonald, is trying to change his corporate culture and pull people together and get them aligned like we just talked about. In essence, doing what I've been doing with organizations for a long time. And he does this successfully with the help of a consultant back in Agent of Change. And that book was endorsed by U.S. military generals, a multi-billionaire, Ken Blanchard, the one-minute manager. A lot of great people got behind that book. So now, 26 years later, I have this book, Miracle Minded Manager, which in a nutshell is about Jack McDonald going back to this consultant saying, hey, you helped me a while back. In the storyline, it's only 3 years back, not 25 or 26. But he says, you know, and thank you for that. And I've been promoted. He's now the president of a major business unit for this company called TIPCO, which stands for Typical Company. But he's like, despite all my success personally, I'm struggling. I'm not real happy with myself. I feel like I'm getting in my own way a little bit. And I've got issues with my father. I've got issues with my brother. I'm not happy with my physical health. I'm stressing. So the whole storyline is basically about how Jack reinvents himself instead of changing his corporate culture. He now changes his own mindset using A Course in Miracles and some, you know, Law of Attraction and some other great spiritual teachings. He learns how to not manage stress, but how to completely delete it, how to eliminate it. And the paradigm shift is, why manage something when you can get rid of it, when you can delete it? So it's a transformational book about personal change and leadership, and transcending the ego thought system and getting into a fearless, and getting into the zone, so to speak.
Okay. So this sounds good in theory, John, but I'm going to play devil's advocate with you. To any of our listeners out there who are scratching their heads and saying, Jennifer and John are on this show speaking about miracles, but, you know, I'm up to my eyeballs in bills, I'm past due on my rent, life is quote unquote hard. How am I supposed to create a miracle in my life? Tell me how that's possible. And I'm suffering a job I hate, by the way, hypothetically.
No, I hear that. And I empathize with the skeptic. I empathize with people who are, you know, doubtful. In fact, that led to a book I wrote called Beyond Doubt, Four Steps to Inner Peace. And I teach the four steps about which are let be present, be mindful, be here and now. Don't be, you know, another train the mind to be in the present, because this comes from the mind projecting something into the future that could go wrong. So whenever we're stressed, we're assuming that I'm not going to pay that bill on time, I'm going to lose my job, or I'm not going to get a job, or something, you know, I'm going to screw up somehow, I'm going to hurt myself, I'm going to embarrass myself. So whenever somebody's feeling stressed, it's because they're not being present. Their mind is not in the now. They're projecting something that might go wrong into the future. It triggers stress hormones. The body starts to react, but it's all coming from the mind. So the let be step is be present, be here, be now, and embrace it. And the let go step is let go of distractions, let go of grief, let go of doubt, let go of skepticism, you know, have a little faith, so to speak. And when we get through those first two steps, the let see phase is begin to see things differently. The thing that was stressing us out, it wasn't the thing that was stressing us out or the person who was stressing us out. It was our mind. It was what we thought of that person or what we thought of that situation that stressed us out. So we begin to see things. That's the shift. And in A Course in Miracles, that's what a miracle is described as. It's a shift in perception. It's just a different way to see things. And it's an awakening. It's an aha moment. And all of a sudden, instead of fearing the fact that we have a pile of bills we have to pay, we're grateful for the fact that we have a home. You know, a mortgage, a car payment, an insurance payment. You know, when we start to shift from, oh, no, and worry, 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 to gratitude. It's one of the most powerful frequencies. And I remember one of my friends was going through a really rough time, really rough divorce. And we had this conversation, and he was the skeptic. He was saying, yeah, right. That all sounds good in theory, but I don't have anything to be grateful for right now. I'm freaking out. I said, well, how do you feel about your eyeballs? How do you feel about your thumbs? How do you feel about your knees, your feet? How do you feel about the fact that you actually have a job? You know, and there are so many things, Jennifer, that we can be thankful for when we're mindful. But the mind, you know, the ego plays tricks on us, and the ego is always saying to us, well, that's not enough. You need more. You need more. You need more. You need something different. You know, you're not good enough. Where are all those bills? Who's going to pay the bills? The ego is constantly, it's just a bunch of monkey chatter, as the Buddhists call it. It's taunting us, so to speak. So when we realize we're not the ego or the false self, and we realize that we're beyond that, we begin to tap into that field of energy that's beyond the ego box, we're not worried about bills anymore. And the money does come because we're not resisting it. We're not disallowing it. That's the law of attraction. If we're in a zone, if we're in a frequency of lack, oh no, I'm lacking money. I'm lacking a good relationship. I'm lacking good health. When we're in a lack frequency, we're asking for more lack. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So the idea here is to make the shift. So you let be, you be present, you let go of all the distractions and the ego temptations. You begin to see the world differently, and then you get into the let flow. So those are the four steps to inner peace that I described in Beyond Doubt. And I do reference A Course in Miracles in the book Beyond Doubt. It was awarded 2010 Most Inspirational Book of the Year up in Canada by a major critic in Toronto. So it was an award-winning book. Yeah, and it was a book that I channeled a good deal of that book from a bizarre experience, a channeling experience that I can talk about later if you're interested. But it's the whole idea came to me in a little room in Lyon, France, actually. I hadn't written a book in 9 years because I was halfway through a book when my father got deathly ill and ended up passing. And I never went back to the book. I just stopped writing. I wasn't feeling it. So for 9 years, I went on with my consulting work and speaking engagements, things like that. And then all of a sudden, I'm over in Lyon, France on a Saturday morning because I was doing a week-long project there and then a project up in London. So I had the weekend to kill, and I got up, and now normally I just go wander around town and look at cathedrals and practice my French and, you know, find a good coffee or something. But there was a presence in my room that commanded me to start writing again. And I resisted. I was getting in my own way. But I finally said, what the heck? I opened up my laptop. I said to whoever this presence was, you want me to write? Tell me what to write. I don't even know what to write. And out comes Beyond Doubt, Four Steps to Inner Peace, which I later on found out that Toyota was using to train senseis.
Oh, my goodness.
I thought, well, here's my first, quote, spiritual book. This isn't a book you'd find in the business section. And all my prior books were business related. All of a sudden, I find out that Toyota's using it. You know, a great world-class business is using it to train their masters. So, well, that's kind of interesting. And the whole book is about peace of mind, gaining peace of mind in whatever it is we do, and being present. You know, think about an athlete, somebody trying to hit a golf ball or hit a tennis ball or, you know, make a free throw in basketball. If they're not present, if they're not in the now, and if they're not letting go of fear and doubt, oh no, what if I miss this? Oh no, what if I whiff the ball? You know what? Oh no. If they get out of that mindset, because if they're in that mindset, Jennifer, they're doomed. You know, and I was a competitive quarterback growing up. I played for the University of Notre Dame. And you know, when you walk up the line of scrimmage as a quarterback and you have a play called and you know what you want to happen and you've got it all figured out, you've been practicing all week, it's part of a strategy, it's part of a game plan. But then all of a sudden you get, oh, you walk up the line of scrimmage and you're like, oh no, what if something goes wrong? Oh no, what if I get hurt? Oh no, what if I do something stupid? Oh no, if you go up to the line of scrimmage with that mindset, you're doomed. And I use that as a metaphor for people getting out of bed in the morning. Do you wake up in the morning and you're like, oh no, what if I can't pay the bills? Oh no, what if I lose my job? Oh no, what if I hurt myself? Oh no, what if I get sick? You're doomed, because that's you're asking for it. It's the law of attraction. You reap what you sow, and most of what you're sowing is a mindful frequency. It's a HeartMath Institute in California calls it, the heart coherent. You're putting out a vibe, and it's a very powerful vibe, and it's a measurable vibe now, but you're putting out a vibe that's calling for a like vibe. So it's like the old saying, misery loves company. You put out a miserable vibe, you're going to find plenty of things to be miserable about. It's universal. So when you start to really be mindful of your vibe and you go up that line of scrimmage going, we're going to nail this. You get up in the morning, you go, I'm going to have a great day. This is going to be a miraculous day. And you really feel it. You really believe it. You train yourself to really, despite what the bumps in the road, I'm glad to be alive. I'm grateful. Again, that's a very high frequency. Then just awesome things begin to unfold in your life. That's the flow. It's the great Tao, the Tao Te Ching. It's the great flow of life. It's the flow of well-being. We're surrounded by a flow of well-being, of positive energy, of pure potential collective consciousness, of joy, a beautiful frequency. But if we don't allow it, then we end up feeling diseased and we get sick and things like that,
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's tough sometimes for people who don't have a context for this. I would say when you meditate or you have a practice of quieting the mind and the ego, it gives you the space to be more available for this. So in order to begin to create miracles, it starts with carving out that space and that intention and going against your nature. All of these things personally is what I've found. And, for many of my spiritual teachers as well, and many of the different spiritual disciplines out there, that's what connects us to this ability to create miracles. Most of the time, I would argue, John, that there are miracles happening every day in every moment of our life, and we don't relate to them like they are miracles. So what would happen if you got up? In fact, can I diverge? There is a really funny story, not funny story, but it's an interesting story that kind of gave me a perspective on gratitude and miracles. Can I share it with you?
Sure, please.
Yeah, so I study Kabbalah. It's one of several spiritual disciplines that I study. And so I like to go to Rosh Hashanah, not from a religious standpoint, but from a connecting to just positive energy and good vibes. And so at Rosh Hashanah last year, this gentleman shared a story, the person, Michael, who is the head of the Kabbalah Center. And he said, there were these three sages who walked into this village, and they go into the main restaurant in the village, and they see this man, and he's sitting at the bar, and he is luminous. He's just glowing. He has just kind of this light about him. So these sages, it's their job to collect all the wisdom of the world. So they go over to this gentleman, and they say, sir, please forgive our interruption, but would you mind telling us what it is you do? Do you have a spiritual practice or something you do? You have this essence about you that we can't quite put our finger on that most people don't have. And the man kind of looks down and, ponders it for a moment and then looks back up at the three sages and says, gentlemen, I wish I could help, but I'm really just an average guy. I try to be a good husband to my wife, and I try to be a good father to my kids, and I try to work as hard as I can work and do the right things. But he said, aside from that, I'm just kind of an average guy. And the sages, you can kind of see they're crestfallen, and they're like, okay. So they walk out of the restaurant, go back into the village. And the next day they return, and now this time the light's a little bit brighter. They can almost see it right outside of the restaurant. And they go in, and there's the man, and he's sitting at a table, but his light is even brighter. And they're like, what the heck is going on with this guy? This is just too bizarre. And so they go up, and they're like, sir, please, you have to understand, it's our job to collect this wisdom for the world. Could you just, ponder it, think about it a little bit more, and tell us, is there anything that you're not thinking of that you might be doing that the rest of us aren't doing? And the man, he thinks about it a little bit more, and he really ruminates on it, and he says, gentlemen, again, I hate to disappoint you once more, but I'm just an average guy. I wake up in the morning, I kind of say some prayers, just like everybody else probably says prayers or does whatever they might spiritually do. And I go about my day, and I try to be a good person, to the best of my ability. And so the sages are like, okay, we give up. So they leave. The third and final day, the sages are in the village. They go, and now the light is so luminous coming through this man. It's basically glowing out the restaurant. And they said, this is it. We have to find out what is his secret. Because we've all met people like this, right, John? Just to bring it back to our conversation. We've met people who just have magic. It's like, what is it? What pill did you take? What has you have everything go right? And how is it you have all the miracles? And the funniest thing was, so they go back and they ask this man, they're like, sir, please stop messing with us. We're sages. It's our job to disseminate this wisdom around the world. And we know that you have something that nobody else has. Is there something, anything you can think of that you do that maybe other people don't do? The man kind of looks around the restaurant. He looks at the ceiling, looks at the floor. And he says, guys, I'm sorry. I have nothing. I really can't think of anything. I wish you well on your journey, safe travels, and farewell. And the sages are, you know, forlorn. They kind of glumly begin to walk out of the restaurant and have given up all hope on figuring out what magic it is this man has. And as they're reaching the door, the man raises his hand and snaps his fingers. And he said, you know, I do this one thing. It's this one thing that, you know, maybe not everybody does. And the sages are wrapped with attention and they're back with this man. And they say, sir, please, please tell us what it is. And the man says, you know, every night before I go to bed, you know, I get down and I ask, you know, the universe, whatever you want to call it. And I say, universe, I have a favor. If you know that I'm going to wake up tomorrow and reveal all the light that you intend for me to reveal, please wake me up. But if you know tomorrow that I'm going to wake up and I am not going to reveal the light that you intend me to reveal, then please don't wake me.
Wow. Yeah.
Right. I love that story because it's like, what if we all woke up? And I'm going to be honest, I've said this a couple of times since I heard it. I'm kind of freaked out. And so I've only said it 5 or 6 times. But what made me think of it in this context, John, is the days where I've said that before I go to bed and I'm like, oh God, I might not wake up tomorrow. And you know what? I'm letting it go. And then I wake up the next morning. There are two things that happen. One, I am present to the miracle that I woke up. And two, throughout that day, I'm looking for greater opportunities to share light and make a difference in people's lives. And so I think it's all about the context of we wake up and we don't realize, holy moly, I just took another breath. Oh my gosh, I'm laying perhaps in a bed. I might be warm. All these things are miracles and they bypass us because of our context and our perception and our filter.
Yeah, well, one of the first things I remind people of, Jennifer, is that you are a miracle. The very fact that you exist, you know, there's 50 to 100 trillion cells in the human body that are somehow getting along and pulling together, so to speak. And the very fact that we wake up and that we walk this planet is our miracle. So when I sign the book, Miracle Minded Manager, to people, I often say to them, thank you for embracing the miracle you are. So a lot of times we think about miracles as some amazing, you know, event that, you know, Jesus did, you know, 2000 years ago or some amazing recovery. But miracles, we are miracles, and miracles are happening all the time. And what we do as humans is we facilitate them. I can't tell you how many times people have come up to me at speaking engagements and things that I've done, and they've told me that I glow. That, you know, that I'm luminous. They, you know, some people see it easier than others. And they even tell me what color and, you know, things like that and what it means. So it's important to, that's all part of being present and being grateful and being aware of what we really are beyond just the physical form. And I had a friend just this morning, and she's a wonderful yoga instructor and a jazz singer. And I've just recently met her, and she's a good friend now. I went to her yoga class for the first time last week, and she called me, and she's reading the book Miracle Minded Manager, and she texted me today, and she said, you know, I'm just getting started in the book, and I can't wait until next week when I have a break, and then I'm really going to read it, and then I'm going to relax. Because she's really stressed. So I texted her back and I said, great. In the meantime, relax. And she laughed, you know, she wrote back. She said, ha ha, what? I said, don't wait for next week to relax. And then she said something like, well, okay. So then here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take 5 minutes every hour to remind myself to relax, you know, and to breathe. So I wrote her back and I said, that's a good start. And then work on 60 minutes every hour. In other words, meditation isn't an event you do once a day for 15 minutes or twice a day for 15 minutes. It's kind of like saying heaven isn't a place you get to someday if you're good and you behave yourself. Heaven's a state of consciousness. It's a state of mind. And when we learn to be meditative throughout the day, just like we breathe throughout the day. I told her that. I said, with every breath, okay, if you're mindful of your breathing, you're essentially meditating. You're mindful of your connection to source energy, to God, to the universe, with every breath. And there's no reason why you can't meditate while you're writing a book, while you're singing jazz, while you're instructing people in yoga, while you're doing whatever it is you're doing, while you're on the radio, while you're on a podcast, while you're interviewing somebody or being interviewed. You can be mindful throughout all of that, but it takes training, it takes practice. And so your story reminds me of the luminous guy. He's in that zone.
That's what I was thinking. That's why the story came to mind.
He's in that zone. And then really interesting things happen. There's an old saying, you've probably heard it in the East. When the student is ready, the teacher will appear. Well, I like to tell people, you know, that when you're ready, when you're prepared for whatever it is you desire, whatever it is you really want, when you're fully prepared, it will come. It's like that Field of Dreams story, the movie with Kevin Costner. Build it and they will come. Prepare yourself and then stop doubting that it won't come, because that's a block. It's an obstacle. Get rid of the fear and the doubt that's preventing the beautiful flow, the great Tao, from coming. Let the fear and doubt go. That's what faith means, you know? And I always say to people, and in fact, I even wrote this in my last book, you cannot have faith and fear at the same time. They're mutually exclusive. If you're afraid of anything, it's a faith problem. If you have true, pure faith, you're not afraid of anything. So, but to say that sounds really simplistic, so you really have to practice it. That's why it is a practice. But when you really let go of all of the ego, fear, and doubt, and recognize that you're not an ego. In other words, it doesn't do you a lot of good to solve problems inside a box when it's the box that's the problem. So in this case, it doesn't do you a lot of good to try to solve ego box problems when it's the ego that's the problem. And that's exactly what the world's doing. We're trying to solve all these problems inside a fear-based mindset, when it's the fear-based mindset that's the problem.
I couldn't agree more, John. And it's funny you bring that up. This weekend, I learned something about training fleas. Have you ever heard about how you train a flea?
I'm not sure. Keep going.
I never heard this. I was actually quite shocked myself. So I was actually in a personal development program this weekend called Landmark, which is probably similar in many ways to the Miracle, the Course in Miracles, and many of the other programs. And the instructor was saying, you know, I had this friend who lived on a farm when she was little, and she used to train fleas. And all of our ears perk up. We're like, train fleas? What is she talking about? And she said, so how you would train a flea is what you would do is you would capture the fleas in a jar, and you would put a lid on the jar. And the flea will only jump up once, John, and it'll hit its head on the top of the jar. And for the rest of that flea's life, you can remove the lid of the jar and it'll never jump higher than the lid of the jar, even though it's completely open. And what I love that she shared in this is that that's our lives. We're fleas in a jar, not realizing we can jump out of the jar anytime we want. And we could jump 10 times the height of the jar, but we're stuck in our own egotistical boxes or our own, I grew up with this suffering, or I had this happen, or you don't know my story. We're so entrenched in our stories and how hard life is. And to top it all off, the cherry on top is that we speak about it. What we speak is what we get. So first we have X happen. We create the drama and the saga around it. Then we bump our heads against the proverbial top of the lid. And then we never jump any higher. And then we go around blaming everybody else in the world around us that, oh, it's hard, you don't know my story. And then we talk to people and we convince everybody how hard it is. And then that's the filter we're perceived through for the rest of our lives until we choose differently.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. We're getting in our own way is the way I like to put it. And we don't even realize it.
Yeah. And so I think what's really important, John, and why, you know, I'm so happy to have you on the show. I know this is your area of expertise is miracles and how do we break free is to just let's give our listeners any takeaways. Is there anything, John, that you'd love to have our listeners be able to take away? I know you started off with the four steps, you know, in your book about overcoming doubt and, you know, connecting to this level of certainty and letting go. Are there any other steps or tools that somebody could apply today and walk out and have a different result tomorrow?
Well, one of the things I teach in one of my workshops, Jennifer, it's something a lot of people learn. Most of us learned it in maybe seventh or eighth grade algebra and quickly dismissed, like, when am I ever going to use that in life? And it's called the transfer function. The transfer function is Y is a function of X. Y are the outputs, okay? The symptoms, the results that we're getting in life, okay? So those are the Ys, the Y factors. And then the X's are the inputs. So it's what we sow is what we reap. And so it's a tool. In fact, there's a tool called the IPO diagram, which is input, process, outputs. The outputs are the Y's, the inputs are the X's, and the X's propagate to the Y's. So think of it like a recipe. If I'm going to make a pumpkin pie, all right, well, I need pumpkin. That's an input. I need an oven. That's an input. You know, I need other ingredients. Those are all inputs. I need an oven temperature. I need amount of time in the oven. So everything is, if you do everything exactly the way the recipe calls for it, you're going to get a predictable output. This is also what in business is called Six Sigma. If you control the inputs, you get predictable outputs. You get accuracy, you get consistency, but you have to know the relationship between the inputs and the outputs. So you have to know what's causing you to get the outputs that you're getting. So what I do, and I teach black belts, you know, Lean Six Sigma black belts in business and leadership teams on this and many other tools. So what I'll have them do sometimes, just as a fun little homework exercise, is I say, do an IPO diagram on yourself. Apply the transfer function to your life right now. So think about the Ys that you're getting, the outputs, the Y factors. Think everything in terms of how's your financial picture look? Are you in a lot of debt? Are you debt-free? If you got plenty of money in the bank, if you got it well invested, what Y outputs do you have? What about your body? Is your body lean and fit and healthy and pain-free? Or are you struggling? How are you doing emotionally? Do you have any, we call them undesirable effects or UDs. Do you have any UDs emotionally? Are you stressed? You know, are you worried about what's going to happen day after day? So you can look at, you can apply it to your whole self, financially, socially, how are your relationships, being a healthy, strong relationship, or is that, you know, going to heck? Yeah, but I have people, I said, you know what, make a list of your outputs right now and be perfectly honest. And then ask yourself, what inputs are triggering these outputs? Because the inputs always propagate to the outputs. Now, what a lot of people do, and you've probably seen this, we have all seen it, is they say, oh, no, the reason I'm in debt isn't because of me, it's because of someone else. So the reason I'm in a lousy relationship, it isn't me, it's someone or something else. The reason I'm sad, or the reason I'm stressed, is because I've got a jerk for a boss, I work for a company that's screwed up. Or I don't have, you know, whatever. So it's a lot of people are quick to say it, the factors causing my misery aren't, I don't have anything to do with them. So if I can leave your audience with any one thing, it's you've got to take responsibility for your outputs as well as your inputs, because it's a very powerful formula. Y is a function of X. It wasn't just some silly thing you learned in seventh grade algebra. It's everything we experience as we go through the day. Every output that we experience has something to do with the inputs that we're putting into the equation. And when you take ownership for that and you take responsibility and you really start managing the inputs and being mindful of the inputs and conscious of the inputs in the relationship, you start to realize, oh, well, if I tweak this, right, if I get rid of that thought, that limiting belief, and a lot of it is belief. That's one of the most important inputs in the entire equation, is what do you really believe at the deepest level? And keep in mind, a lot of these inputs, these thoughts and beliefs are subconscious. So we're not even aware we believe them or that we think them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. They're blind spots. So you really have to peel back the onion, you know, and that's that, and search inside yourself. That's what they call it at Google. You know, search inside yourself to find what you can change, what X factors you can change to get dramatically different Y results. And it's a super powerful tool, a powerful exercise, and I highly recommend it. I'm doing it all the time.
I can see where that would be extremely powerful, John. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You're basically working your way backwards. You're saying, well, I have X, so therefore something, or I have Y, to use your languaging. I have Y, therefore something came before Y. What was it that preceded Y? And in going into that inquiry, I think it all begins with being curious too. I think so often we bump into people and situations and ideas in life without actually getting curious and digging deeper. And the moment you bring that awareness, that curiosity to it, you harness your power, and then you can direct that power whatever direction you want to take it.
Well, that's another important takeaway, is that we tend to think of the word empowerment as something that one person gives another. You know, I wish my boss would empower me with, you know, whatever, more responsibility or more authority. Empowerment isn't about an external factor, you know, empowering you. It's you tapping into the extraordinary power that's giving you life, that's surrounding you, that's always around you, that's never distant or gone. It's tapping into that power that we all have available to us, and tapping into that potential that we have. So that's, again, it's a way of getting out of our own way. So if we start to realize that I can channel this tremendous power that is all around me, the great Tao, the great flow, the great current, if I can learn to channel that into what I want in my life, channel that extraordinary power. By the way, that you have to transcend the ego to do that, because the ego is going to say, there's no power out there. It's all on you. You have to do everything. You have to work hard to be successful. Okay. No, you don't. I'm here to tell you, you don't have to work that hard to be successful, but you do have to work smart. You do have to work intelligently, and you have to recognize that you're never alone, that there's a greater power that you have available to you. And when you learn to channel that power into what you want, you focus it. And incidentally, it's not about being selfish. It's not about channeling it into something just for me. That's an ego thing. It's about channeling it into something that I can do to make the world a better place. So it's not me-opic vision, what's in it for me. It's what I call we-opic, what's in it for we. And I'll give you one quick example of that. It's the great late Walt Disney. Walt Disney's personal mission statement was, quote, to use my imagination to bring happiness to millions. To use my imagination, my gift, or one of my gifts, to bring happiness to millions. Not to me personally, Walt Disney, but to millions. So he was channeling a gift, and we've all got a gift to give. And when, you know, we talk a lot of these days about purpose. What's your purpose in life? What's your reason for being here? What's your passion? What do you really feel strongly about? What do you really believe in? I can tell you right now, a generic answer for that is, whatever gift you have been given, God-given gift that you have been given, your purpose is to give it away. And when you do, you will feel passion, and you will feel inspiration, and you will feel fearless, and you will be like, this is why I'm here. This is why I'm on this planet. And it's to give away this gift I've been given. It's what fuels me when I write. It's what fuels me when I speak. And I take no credit for it as an ego, as a, you know, a human being, as a John Murphy person. I give full credit to the source that's allowing me to share it.
John, I have to say, I love what you just said so much. You'll have to forgive me. I'm memeing it right now. Whatever gift you've been given, it is your purpose to give it away, is what you said, right?
Yeah.
I just think that's so brilliant because it's such a hot topic right now in society. You know, everybody talks about Gen Zs and millennials and what's important and they want to find purpose, but that's not true. We all want to find purpose. We all wake up and say, please, you know, give me purpose. Give me a reason to get out of bed. Let me pay it forward. And it all comes from sharing. To your point, to Walt Disney's story, Walt Disney wouldn't have had purpose unless he shared it. When we keep our gifts to ourselves, whether it's speaking, whether it's writing, whether it's helping others, some people are really amazing. They can be healers or helpers. One of my friends has her dream job as an executive assistant. And it was funny because she was in a class with me recently and the instructor looked at her and raised an eyebrow and he said, that's her dream job. And she said, absolutely, that's what I love. She loves being of service to somebody. And that's the thing, we all have a purpose and it's our job to figure out what is that purpose, what is that gift, and how can we transform that into something that we can share with the world?
Yeah, well, I wrote a book years ago called Reinvent Yourself, and it's a story about a guy trying to figure out what that purpose is. And his coach basically says, well, think back to when you were a kid. What did you love doing as a kid? Where you got into, I call it moments of bliss, timelessness. You're in a zone. It's timeless. You're highly productive. You just love what you're doing. And that's a clue. Another clue is if you had all the money in the world, what would you do during the day to benefit the world? You know, what would you do to give of yourself to make things better? And when you start to really think about, wow, what really gave me bliss when I was a child? Because what happens to a lot of children, in fact, it happened to me for a while, you get talked out of whatever your passion is. Oh, you can't make any money doing that. You need to be a doctor. You know, you need to go to law school. You need to do this. You need to do that. And, you know, the people telling us this, our parents, for example, you know, our grandparents, whatever, they mean well. They love us. They care about us. But they don't necessarily know what really turns somebody on. So when we find that, and then we practice it and we get better skilled at it, that's a very powerful force.
Yeah, and it's so great too because it's something that we all long for. If you were to be a fly on the wall of conversations in villages, cities, towns, coffee shops around the world, some variation or another of conversation is we're either talking about other people and our circumstances, or we're talking about how we wish they would be different and that we could have more of whatever our friends, the people on TV, whoever it is, has. And instead, shift the focus and say, what can I give? How can I be of service? And in that conversation, you get to create miracles for your life and the life of others.
Yeah, exactly. It's like we're all channeling something. Some of us are aware of it, and some of us maybe we're not. But when we're giving, we're channeling. Let me put it that way. You know, if we're a singer and we're singing and people are loving it, you know, and embracing our sharing our voice with them, that's a very powerful connection. You know, when we're teaching a class, whatever it is we're doing, when it's got giving as its foundation. It's a giving by the teacher, by the singer, by the writer, by the interviewer, whatever. It's far more powerful than when we approach life with a taking mindset. Take, take, take. What's in it for me? What can I get out of this? So, you know, I don't write books for the money. It's you know, we all have to make a living, but I write books because I have something I want to share.
Yeah, and make a difference for people. I know it's so funny, even the show, it's not like, oh, this is a huge money thing. It's something that I love getting to have conversations like this with you, John, and all the other amazing guests we've had on the show, because this is a conversation that I'd love to just have over a coffee shop, and yet we get to share it with the world. And so anybody, anytime, somebody 100 years from now, assuming we still have similar technology or some variation of it, could tune in and listen and might make a difference in someone's life 100 years from now. You never know.
Well, you never really do know, but sometimes you do, because I've had people come up to me over the years just saying, wow, you said something a year ago or 5 years ago or 10 days ago that just really got my attention and helped me shift my thinking. And I had a woman come up to me just the other night because I gave a free lecture. Again, it wasn't about money. I gave a free lecture a few months ago here in Palm Beach, Florida. And this woman was in the lecture, and I was actually teaching EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which is a great letting go technique. And she had tried everything for just extraordinary back pain. She tried acupuncture, chiropractor. She'd had surgery. She was on medications, all kinds of stuff. And she was just miserable. So she was at her doctor. Talk about synchronicity. She was at her doctor the very day that she saw a notice that I was speaking on EFT that night. And her doctor, without knowing this, she's like, is there anything else I can try? I just don't know what to do. He said, well, I don't know if this is, a good idea or not, because I really don't understand it. But there's something called emotional freedom technique, and I've had patients use it before. And it's a release technique. You're releasing toxic energy, if you will, blockage in your body. And you might want to check it out. And she's like, oh my gosh, I know a guy speaking about that tonight. I'm going to go. Long story short, I ran into her just the other day, and she said she's running again. She said she, because she couldn't even barely walk, and she couldn't get out of a chair. She said the pain was just horrible. And she said she's been tapping every day because it's a form of meridian tapping. And I describe it in the book, Miracle Minded Manager. And I have a YouTube channel that I teach it on for free. So again, it's not about making money. It's just about sharing best practices with people who have challenges. And I just love doing it. So anyway, it was just wonderful for me. Talk about feeling great, feeling joy, feeling gratitude for her to just seek me out and say, thank you. You've changed my life.
Yeah. Sometimes we can go our whole lives and never hear it. And so I think that's a really important message is thank people. Thank people in your life who make a difference. Thank the person who holds the door open. Thank the pizza guy. Thank the people you work with and your boss. How rarely do we hear thank you? And it takes it back full circle to gratitude, which is what we were focused on in the beginning. A little gratitude goes a long way both directions.
Yeah. Well, and here's what you asked about tips. I'll leave another tip real quick. And the tip is pay attention to who you pay attention to. In other words, a lot of, quote, experts have no idea what they're talking about. Okay, so a lot of times we think of someone as an expert, and because they've got a bunch of degrees or they've got a bunch of different things, but they don't necessarily know everything. And for example, I mean, I ran my foot through a lawnmower in high school after winning the state championship in football. I was told I'd never play football again. I was in hospital for a week. I had over 10 hours of surgery twice on my foot and to reconstruct it and put it back together again. And I was told before I left the hospital that my football days were over. You'll never play football again. This is by a world-renowned orthopedic surgeon with all kinds of patents on artificial limbs and things like that. Very renowned surgeon. And I cried for days. I was, this was like my passion at the time. I loved playing football. I dreamed about playing football and, college and maybe even the NFL and whatnot. Well, I pretty much I'd given up hope until I read a book and a story about a guy named Rocky Blyer who played for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but he played after having his foot destroyed in Vietnam. Mm. And he was told he'd never play football again, but he decided to think differently. There's the miracle, the shift in perception. Despite what the experts were telling him, and with all due respect to doctors, I've got the doctors in my family. I love doctors and I rely on doctors. Going to see one next week just for a regular checkup. But with all due respect, there's a lot doctors don't know, and good doctors will tell you that. There are all kinds of things. How can any of us know everything?
We can't.
So I chose not to.
John, I'm so sorry. We're out of time. This is the first time we've done this in like months of having this show, but we've actually used up all the time on today's show. So I'm going to interrupt you and you'll have to forgive me for it. But I do want to make sure people know where to find your book so that we can be sure to allow the next guest on the station or the next host on the show.
Well, I went on to play football too.
Amazing. At Notre Dame, you said, right?
Yeah, Notre Dame. Yep.
Perfect. Well, tell our listeners, where can they find information? Because clearly you have so much to share and I could interview you for 3 more hours.
Well, thank you so much. And it did fly by, didn't it? You can go to johnjmurphy.org, www.johnjmurphy.org. You can find me on Facebook, author John J. Murphy. You can find me on LinkedIn, John Murphy Mystic. You can find me on YouTube. You can Google me. You can Google the books. But everything's listed under johnjmurphy.org.
I love that. Well, John, I mean, literally, I could talk to you for hours. So it's been such a pleasure to have you on the show today. And thank you for all of our listeners tuning in now or in the future. And whenever you're checking out this episode, we appreciate it. And it's only because of you that we do this and that we have this show. So to feel free to check out later in the week. We will have this full episode on iTunes under Get Yourself the Job on iTunes. You can also go to latalkradio.com under the Get Yourself the Job page. And at the bottom of that page, you'll find this show as well as all the prior shows that we've ever done in the past. And I do have a new company now called MetaBizics, MetaBizics. And I'm offering a new workshop coming up here starting March 12th on inventing your next 6 months. So I do invite you to check that out. And this coming Thursday, do check out Awake TV Network. And on there, you'll be able to see the MetaBizics show at 7 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. So thanks so much for joining us today, John. And thank you to all of our listeners and wishing everybody a wonderful rest of your week.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.